Hello there, Paul Carenza here. Greetings, podcast listener. It's been a while, hasn't it? Well, the more observant of you would have noticed, this has been the Heptagon Club podcast until now. But as in previous episodes, you'll know, we've closed the doors on that particular podcast. I did say watch this space for a future podcast. This is, I should point out, not that future podcast as such. This is not going to be a regular thing that now appears. But I wanted to use this podcast channel because to keep the Heptagon Club online, I have to still pay the same monthly charge regardless whether I'm putting out new content or not. So I wanted to add a new thing. So I'm doing a show called Comedians with Books. And I've done this once earlier this year in 2019 with Guildford Fringe at the fabulous Star Pub, which is where the Stranglers first performed. That's a nice little factoid for you. We're doing it again at Guildford Fringe Festival in July of 2019. And in fact, as this podcast launches, it's going to be a month from today. So I thought that would be a good as time as any to partly talk about that. But also I wanted to actually give a little excerpt from the previous Comedians with Books event we did. Now, the idea behind this show is it's comedians with books. So the first half of our show is stand-up comedians doing their set. But these are stand-ups who've also sat down long enough to write something book-wise. And so the second half of each of our shows becomes a book festival panel kind of scenario. The books are available in the interval. And the second half, we interview the comedians on a panel. They talk about the books, behind the scenes of the writing process. And generally, it's a chance for the audience to ask questions to some of these authors about their different topics they've written about, but also about what the difference is between stand-up and writing the books and how it's been their experience of writing. So we recorded that panel discussion at our first show a few months ago. And that's what we include on this podcast for you now. If you'd like to come to the next Comedians with Books show, it's on Guildford Fringe Festival, Monday, July the 8th. As part of the Guildford Fringe. You can Google now, Guildford Fringe Festival Comedians with Books, and you will find details of that show. If you find the one that's passed, that's not the one. Okay. We're also doing it again in October. That's going to be our third show. So if you listen to this podcast in July 2019 has been and gone, but October 2019 is still ahead of you, then a yet-to-be-announced cast will join us in October 2019, alongside Guildford Book Festival. So the proper big boy, that's when they have the Jeremy Paxmans and Graham Nortons and all those sort of people doing the big book festival stuff. We're going to do the Guildford Fringe Festival as kind of a fringe to the book festival. Comedians with Books will be back in October. We'll try and mention in the text of this podcast, in the podcast info, and also online at Paul Carenza on Twitter. You can find us on Facebook as well, my Paul Carenza, facebook.com/paul.carenza. Lots of information will be there about the lineup for October. In July, it's James Carey talking about the sacred art of joking. It's Pierre Hollins talking about his book, which is a sort of philosophical whodunit. And we've also got Dan Evans, brilliant one-liner comedian, talking about his books, which are sort of spoof whodunits. They're like crime thrillers, kind of pulp novels, but they're just fun and funny, and that's brilliant. So if you would like to come and join us to see those brilliant comedians do their sets, and then after the break, they will be having signed and sold books, you can actually interview them about their books at the Comedians with Books show. As a taste of what that's like, we've now got an excerpt, a good old half hour to 40 minutes excerpt of our first Comedians with Books show. So who are you about to hear? Aidan Goatley, brilliant comedian. His book is called Never Eat the Buffet at a Sex Club. I'm told that it doesn't reference that anywhere in the book. That's just a random title he thought of. And it's excerpts from his stand-up shows, including the brilliant 10 Films with My Dad, which he talks a little bit about in the discussion to follow. We've also got Rosie Wilby, who's done her book Is Monogamy Dead, based on her stand-up show as well, The Breakup Monologues, and she's got a podcast as well. You can find that. It's a brilliant one. So her book Is Monogamy Dead. And then Matt Parker, the stand-up mathematician, his brand new book, which was out on the pretty much the day that we recorded this at the previous Comedians with Books show. It's called Humble Pie, and it's all about mathematical errors which make things go wrong in the world. And he does in his book discussion reference a few things that he mentioned in the bit we didn't record, in his stand-up sort of set in the first half. So only once or twice you'll hear something that refers back to a thing in the previous half. It doesn't ruin the enjoyment of what's to follow. Hope you enjoy it. I'll pop up again halfway through and also at the end. with another little plug at for stuff I've got coming up. But right now, sit back, tune your ears into the fascinating, bookish, comedic fun of our first Comedians with Books panel discussion with Aidan Goatley, Rosie Wilby, Matt Parker, and me chairing it, Paul Carenza.
Welcome, Comedians with Books. A special thank you for coming to this first ever one of these. Look, they've all turned up. Hey, audience. Hey, 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 audience. Well done, you. So, I've got nothing particular planned. We'll just ask some I'll ask some questions. You can ask each other questions, and you can ask questions as well. The worst question you get at these things is, so what made you want to write a book like the book you've written? So, Aidan, you can start with that one.
Thanks for that.
There you go. But your book is bits of your stand-up shows.
Yeah, so basically, because the first book I did was my first show, which was 10 Films with My Dad, which is a show I did, which I've done all over the world.
I saw your website says, I played all over the world, Dubai, Istanbul and Guildford.
And Guildford.
So we have made the big three. That's before you came here tonight as well.
Because I'm keeping it real. And it basically is a show about the fact that it was the first show I ever did. And because I didn't start comedy until I was 39. And I know, 2 years ago. I sort of stupidly went, well, I'm just going to bloody do a show. And the show was 10 Films My Dad, which is a show about me and my dad not talking, but only watching films. So it's about the 10 films from when I was a child till now. And that's in the book as well, by the way. And so I put that in there, and then The Joys of Retail, which is another show, because I did a media degree, so I spent all my life working in retail. Which is great. And we've got some other bits and bobs. I'll shove them all in, and then hopefully at gigs people will buy them.
So was it that thing that you'd done the shows, you'd done the festival, Edinburgh, yeah, toured it a bit, but then you kind of don't want to sort of say goodbye to the show yet?
Well, I'm still doing 10 films now, well, like 10 years later. So I've got no excuse whatsoever. So people turn up for that one. It's basically just a thing to have and to have something else to sell at gigs, because, you know, as you said during the thing, the gigs are few and far between. Sometimes they're not brilliantly paid. This one is amazingly well paid.
good to know for next year.
I'm getting paid a fortune. I don't know about these two. But no, it's just another revenue source kind of thing, and to get out there and then hopefully thank
you. Rosie, so your book as well, did that come from stand-up in a way, or did
it come from it? Definitely. It came from three shows. I did a trilogy of shows all about love and relationships, The Science of Sex, which was all about attraction and first meeting somebody and dating, and then Is Monogamy Dead? The comedy show, which eventually lent its title to the book, and the final part of the trilogy was called The Conscious Uncoupling, and was looking at breakups and how technology affects how we can break up with each other, because it was kind of looking at a breakup that happened via email for me in 2011, which still back then it seemed kind of a bit harsh that somebody dumped me by email. Oh, yes. But I did feel better about it once I corrected her spelling. And punctuation. And changed the font, actually. Would you believe? Break up in Wingdings, it comes up with a little police car. Much cheerier. And then the Conscious Uncoupling show led to the podcast, the breakup monologues, and I was doing all of this stuff and realised I was really looking in a slightly deeper way at love and relationships than just kind of doing jokes about, oh, I was on Match.com and I was matched with myself and I was only a 73% match, which is actually a true thing that happened. I realised there was a whole deeper side, and I became friends with a scientist at King's called Kazi Rahman, who's one of the leading British scientists in the field of sexuality. I originally saw him on a TV documentary and got in touch with him, and I started kind of a loose collaboration with him and being a sort of public engagement channel for some of his research, and then also being able to take part in some of his experiments and him being able to print out groovy graphs of, you know, different results in different kind of tests for like gay men and straight men and lesbians and straight women and Rosie. I'd like to be my own category, it'd be brilliant. So it all led to the book and this kind of slightly deeper exploration of love and relationships and looking at how relationships work and how difficult it is and how challenging it is to make a relationship work sometimes.
And I suppose then you've done sort of the typical Edinburgh Festival hour show, it's a way of going not just kind of putting it straight on the paper, but you can go a bit deeper with it and investigate it further.
Yeah, and you can have the light and the shade, and it's kind of all structured around the narrative of my own discoveries and actually working out how to be in a relationship and who I wanted to be in a relationship. So it's kind of written a bit like a novel where it actually, you know, structurally follows on. Because I went on a writer's retreat and the tutor said this wonderful thing and said that non-fiction is the story of an idea. And so I kind of told the story of me getting all these ideas about love and relationships and the story of talking about them on stage and how that then played out in my own life and actually having healthier, better relationships and communicating so much better about what I wanted in a relationship. But also I think the thing about a book is that it's really nice to have a thing that is kind of fixed. One of the lovely but also frustrating things about comedy is it's very ephemeral. You can have a great gig and then it's gone. And even if you video it and try and record it, it's somehow not the same as the energy that you had in the room with those people there. Whereas the book stays the same, it's constant.
Yeah. There's an end product, like that.
Yeah.
Isn't there? Yeah. And so Matt, speaking of the science then, similar thing, I suppose, you, in the way there is, you've got science and comedy together equals book, maybe.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for putting that as an equation. I had to give it a gradient down to me. So my book is the story of the idea of you know, whoops. So it came about because it's different to stand up. I think that's the most honest way to put
it. So any content in the book, had you not been doing that as stand-up already?
You know, my first, because I've only written two books, and the first one, I repurposed a lot of stuff from stand-up into the book, and I'm curious to know how that went for you, because I then found stuff I'd done on stage, I'd gotten so used to the rhythm of the audience, and them being, I mean, yeah. To us, you're one collective consciousness, so don't take it personally. But it's a real, it's interesting, the rhythm and the pacing and the structure is so dependent on the audience and changes audience to audience. But when I was writing it, I kept getting stuck in doing it how I knew it worked on stage.
I got stuck in the whole kind of, because when you're doing, well, when you're doing a script like for stage, it's all very brief and you keep it as succinct as possible. And then you write that all out, it's like four pages.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
This is my last year.
Yeah, I don't write everything longhand for when I'm doing shows. I've got in my head, I work it out as I'm driving. And then I've got like key words.
Yeah, me too.
And I'm sure you guys are the same. All comedians have got random books with just bits of paper and bits of words in them that make no sense whatsoever. You know, I had one that said mustard shopping. I have no idea.
That'll be with the retail bit, probably.
It could have been, yeah. But you know, it's
once
just.
Once I had my shopping list written on the back of my hand, and yeah. I hadn't rubbed it off, and someone thought that was my set list. When is she going to do the joke about hummus?
So it's true, because you do bullet points for stand-up,
which makes
it very well paid per word. However, the book, I thought it was so different, and I think I liked the bits I wrote from scratch more than I liked the stuff I repurposed from the stage. And so I was very specific, well, very deliberate with the second book. I wrote it, almost all of it, there's a few exceptions, was by accident. The rest of it, I wrote it for the book first. And then once the book was kind of locked in, I then started trying it out on stage. And so I just would pick a story I liked and yell it at an audience, and then you very quickly discover where the rhythms and bits are.
And do you still, with your book, also, this is out like 2 days ago,
yeah.
Brand new out. So do you still have that? Is it still feels sort of fresh that you're still finding ways of talking about the stuff in there? Is it in there for a while?
The story about the mine, the salt mine, the drilling into the mine, the salt, the water flooding in, that's the first time I've told that story on stage. Because I was just like, I love this story. I want to try it on stage. So I hit it in the middle of the set where you won't notice it's terrible. And there were no actual jokes yet, right? So I told it. I knew I've told the running out of fuel story. I started telling that like a year ago when I first wrote that in the book. I was like, this is such a good story. And so then I started chatting about that on stage. And the Gandhi one, the second time out. So I'm still trying stuff on stage to this new experience of taking what's in the book and then turning it into what works with an audience. And it's very different.
Do you find as well, then, Matt, when you're the stand-up mathematician thing, has comedy always been part of your communication? And do you see yourself writing a serious book without comedy, or is it always part of that in there?
It's always been part in there. So I used to be a maths teacher, as previously established, and many other quiet, non-heckling math teacher said hello in the interval, which was
all math teachers.
They're now my favourites, so I just deleted all their names. No, but the thing is, right, math teacher humour is a very specific, terrible genre, and I love it. And its primary function is to annoy teenagers, which is great, which is what teachers do for fun. And I, when I was a teacher, and when I was doing math, it's so true, the best bit is where you do something you know is a horrific innuendo, and you keep a perfectly straight face. Oh. The looks of recognition. Every time I had to get an assignment handed in, I would write on the board, hand in, and I would abbreviate it ass. And I'd just write that on the board and go, okay, hand in ass, everyone. Hand in assignment, everyone. They'd all giggle at the abbreviation. I never broke character. With teenagers, the moment they think you're trying to impress them, it's all over. And so the comedy stuff, you got to entertain them despite themselves. I still do lots of shows for teenagers, but it's a different, it's very similar to stand-up, but without the jokes, I guess. It's weird.
And I guess in that environment, they have to be there, do they? Are they?
Well, this is it. It's great. There's an audience who are obliged to be there. And, I mean, who was I talking to who came to the Reading show? Yeah, you don't recall laughing at all, right? But you did laugh.
I don't know about the kids.
Not about the kids, exactly. Oh, yeah, most of us were teachers. The reason I liked the book was stand-up. As you kind of noticed, I've got a bait and switch career model going on where I will promise comedy and then audience show up and then I hit them with maths instead, which I think is hilarious. However, you're only going to get a certain audience doing that. And because I don't just talk about maths because I love it, which is true, I also think it's important to do a bit of maths PR, a book is going to hit a different audience. People who wouldn't come along to a comedy show about books or maths or any other nerdy things. And so I thought a book would be a way to get a different audience.
And I guess, so you've got a fairly good niche there, maths. Are there many maths communicators/comedy out there? There's not many.
Oh, I'm looking at the brochure in Edinburgh, there's hundreds. I know! Everyone else has come running in. Yeah. They're all late to market, though. I got there first. Guildford Fringe, I saw Kyle D. Evans, who's a music comedy performer, in this room, and he was part of that, doing maths jokes and songs.
I've got a 10-minute mid-set on maths, so I just left it in the car. So you're here, you're coming. It's fine. Yeah, but, and even so, as well, is it a fairly niche area? Have you got other people, other books doing similar things to you that you're
I think there are other people who've obviously touch on love and relationships in an intelligent way. Obviously you mentioned Sarah Pascoe gave me a lovely quote for my book, and she has touched on monogamy and things like that, although I did it first. I think I don't know of any other comedian who has taken a show to Edinburgh that is exclusively about monogamy and about this question of fidelity and what it means. It was quite a mathematical show in a way, because a lot of it was about the results of a survey that I did, asking what counts as cheating and stuff like that. And my favourite question was, I asked people what other secrets they kept from each other, and 12 people confessed to secretly giving themselves the best portion of food.
I want to open up. Should we open the floor? Any questions and things? Actually, I've got one. Can I do a very quick question to everyone? First of all, just for anyone interested, as I always am, about how books actually get made. So I know Aidan, you've gone self-published.
Yeah.
And I think you other guys will.
Because I've spent 10 years like working in comedy and. Sorry, this is going to sound incredibly British. I do quite well in Edinburgh. I set out in Edinburgh. I've never not made money in Edinburgh.
What?
I know. Nowhere else. And
the background of that joke is everyone else is the inverse of that.
I'm the inverse of that, totally. I make money everywhere else.
Because I walk around Edinburgh and I just can't smile. Because I go, how's it going? And they go, oh, it's really bad, you know? And I go, yeah. I've never been contacted by an agent. I've never had thousands of rejection emails from agents and stuff like that. Never had any interest, but I do well with the shows, and I do tour them around the countries and go abroad and stuff like that. So literally when it came to the book, I did the thing of sending stuff out for 10 films and again, nothing. And then I just thought I'll just print them myself. I didn't print it myself, obviously.
You find a company.
I sat there with your hand artisan book publishing and my shit. I just went online and did that way. And that way I can, it costs like a fiver a book. So I turn up venues, I go, oh, look, give me a fiver, a minimum. Do the spiel about my child. And she doesn't even exist. go that way. Don't get me wrong, I would love to have someone else take some of my money. Agents or anything, but I've never had, are there any in? So that's why I do that.
And what about you, Gus? Did you approach publishers? Did they approach you? Do you go with your idea? How's it?
If you want to go with a traditional publisher because you want to make less money but you crave legitimacy, then they tend to use agents as the filter. So very few publishers will take a manuscript. Yeah. I don't know how you went about it.
Yeah, agent as well.
Yeah, so they kind of outsource sifting through the signal and the noise to agents. And so I wrote some stuff for newspapers. And you do enough stuff in newspapers, agents are constantly trying to look for the next source of free money. And so suddenly like three contacted me simultaneously. So I must have just tipped over some threshold where they went, okay, this guy could produce some money for us. And so three got in touch and I met them and I had some great advice because I had some friends who had previously written books and they're like, oh, Ben, you're going to be working very closely with this person because they're not just an agent, they're almost your first editor. And so I then, they pick someone you can work with on a day-to-day basis. And so I met them all. I don't know how that worked for you. Did you?
Yeah, I entered a writing competition that was run by a women's writing magazine called Ms. Lexia. And I was shortlisted, and that was a memoir that I was writing about my time when I used to be a musician. That was called How Not to Make It in Britpop.
Which is a cracking show.
It was a nice show that I did years ago. But I wasn't like a big famous musician or anything. I had an indie kind of career and had an album out that on my own label, a bit like you doing your own book and that kind of thing. And, you know, I had my fans and stuff and toured around, but I guess because I wasn't a big name, it was difficult to, I was sort of trying to maybe interest publishers in that. And then when I started doing the sex and relationship stuff and the monogamy, started writing a lot of newspaper articles and so on. I did a TEDx talk, I did Radio 4 Forethought and lots of other bits and pieces. And part of the prize for this competition for the other piece of writing was to go to a big fancy agents party upstairs at Foyles in London and network with loads of different agents. So then I met some people who were interested, and it kind of all went from there. But it was still really difficult shaping, for a non-fiction book, you write a proposal, quite an extensive one with kind of sample chapters, but summaries of exactly what you're gonna say, which is like writing your edit blurb before you've written the show, and it's really weird because I changed so much. I didn't really know what I was going to say until I started writing it. So it's kind of a bit of a weird way that you do a non-fiction book, whereas a fiction book you generally have to have completed it all. It kind of went from there. Got an agent and had quite a few meetings with big publishers, but we had meetings with Little Brown and people like that, but I think they were the young funky editors were really into it, and then the kind of senior people they had to get into it were came over a bit conservative and a bit like, she writes a lot about being gay and monogamy, and kind of polyamory, and it was a bit perhaps a bit challenging, a bit edgy, and they weren't kind of into it. So we went with an independent publisher in the end who, you know, in some ways that's good because I could write the book that I wanted and I didn't have a lot of kind of, you can't say this or whatever. But obviously they don't have as much resources to kind of do marketing and promote the book. So in some ways it's been a bit like an indie DIY thing because I've done a lot of the promo and got myself booked at literary festivals and all that kind of stuff. But in another way, it's quite nice having a publisher and they kind of get it into the shops and they printed it and designed the cover and did all that kind of stuff.
And I guess in theory, publishers might like comedians because we do a bit of PR ourselves. And we're out there.
I
handed my book in, the manuscript in, very happy on the deadline, midnight of the deadline, and then got an auto reply email at 8 o'clock the next morning saying we went into administration last night. So I was the last one through there. So they got the book out, but they said you've got to do all the PR yourself. So they just sacked the PR person. And so I hired her back, actually, at my cost. So, but yeah, you just got to roll with it, haven't you, really? And
Your book destroyed a publisher.
Correlation is not causation.
I don't know how you get to correlation.
I love the head of the correlation is not causation. That is a fine mathematical.
Where else would you get that head
for? So I hope you're enjoying this behind-the-scenes panel discussion, Comedians with Books. It's the first time we're doing this. I like doing new things, and this is certainly one of those. This was a new idea we had to do something. It's a bit of a stand-up book festival hybrid, and we did that earlier this year. Guildford Fringe Festival hosts us again in July. July the 8th, it's a Monday, at the Guild Hall in Guildford. If you happen to be near Guildford or send anyone down who is, you can hear a very similar discussion to the one you're hearing now. It's with James Carey, Pierre Hollins, Dan Evans talking about religion and comedy and whodunits and the book writing process, all behind-the-scenes-y stuff of that. The very next night after that, Tuesday 9th of July, I'm doing another brand new thing, an evening of new theatre writing. We're calling it Three Times Tables, because the idea is it will be three mini plays where the theme of each is they have to be set around three different tables. So we've got a wedding reception from hell, we've got a crime scene, the investigation following that, and we've got a PTA fair, parent-teacher association-y thing, full of lots of wry comeuppance and things. I've not written that one. I've written the wedding reception one. We've got two other brilliant writers doing the others. We've also got another writer who might be doing a thing for that one, or might be for a future one. But again, if you are near Guildford or know someone who is, send them down. Guildford Fringe Festival. So on Tuesday the 9th of July will be Three Times Tables at the Star Inn. That's the evening of new theatre. But the night before, Monday 8th of July, Comedians with Books. And we'll go back to the discussion of that in just a moment, hearing questions from the floor. Other stuff up to at the minute, I've got just started a new blog. I did this thing called a Yule blog before. I mentioned it on the Heptagon Club podcast here before. And I've kind of converted that blog. It's the Neil Down stand-up blog. If you Google Neil Down stand-up, you'll find it, into a writing blog. So it's me more looking at writing and skeleton structure of story structure. I'm kind of fascinated at the minute by those building blocks that make up the stories of books and films. There's loads of story experts who've looked at this stuff, like Blake Snyder, John York, Joseph Campbell, Christopher Vogler. If those names mean nothing to you, but you're vaguely interested in writing story structure, then it's worth a little look into those things. But I'm going to be blogging from now on about some of those people, some of their theories, and just those building blocks that make up stories we see all the time on TV and on the cinema screen. Maybe with a view one day to writing a book of my own about something like this too. I'm still pondering how that might look. Other stuff going on at the minute. I've got a couple more children's books out later this year. Joe's Bros and the Bus That Goes is available for pre-order. That joins Noah's Car Park Arc and Moses and the Exodus Express. The Guildford Fringe Festivals are coming up, plus loads more comedy events. I'm open for bookings as well if you'd like a comedian at your place. If you've got a venue going, August is nice and quiet. November's a bit quiet too. Otherwise, it's pretty busy between now and the end of the year. I think that's the main stuff going on. Otherwise, yeah, find us back on Twitter, at Paul Carenza, on Facebook, paul.carenza, facebook.com/paul.carenza. And as for this thing, that's the other thing I want to talk about, what to do with this podcast channel. I'm going to kind of convert it into this thing of a podcast channel. I don't know if anyone really does this. Normally, a podcast feed is just one podcast. But I've done the Heptagon Club. I'm still kind of paying Podbean every month to host it here. So I thought, rather than let that just be the end of it, I'll just keep adding some stuff here occasionally, like this Comedians with Books excerpt. And there will be a new podcast arriving at some point. It might not be here, though. I might signpost it from here, because for various reasons, it might be hosted by someone else. I'm looking at working with a couple of different organisations. I won't say which yet, because I don't want to jinx it, but I've pitched around three or four different podcasts that we're talking to people, very famous organisations and broadcasters that you may or may not be familiar with, who would maybe be doing a Paul Carenza podcast of sorts. If that happens, you'll be the first to know about it. I'll mention something here, signpost to you it, elsewhere. And in the meantime, I'll use this particular feed to just add stuff like this, comedians with books, book panel excerpts. So in fact, the one we're going to do in July with James Carey and Pierre Hollins and Dan Evans, July the 8th, we'll record that, hopefully, if they all consent to that. And then we'll put it out again ahead of the October one, ahead of the October Comedians with Books event. So you will at some point, if you can't make Guildford Fringe Festival, you will hear the Comedians with Books panel discussion. You won't hear the stand-up sets. You've got to come down to hear that. But yeah, get down if you can. It's going to be fun. We're at the Guildhall, Monday 8th of July. And be great to see you there. So Google Guildford Fringe Festival, Comedians with Books. Right now, though, back to the first one we did. Matt Parker, Aidan Goatley and Rosie Wilby. Take your questions from the floor.
We should open up to the floor. Any questions? Put your hand up and then just heckle.
Yeah. Matt.
Claire.
Is your book... I'm going to try and stitch you up. No. Is your book about mathematical mistakes born from your own journey through mathematics and book writing?
That's a good question. So, if you missed it, it's... Matt, your book's amazing. Is it about mathematical mistakes born from my own experience?
Is it?
That's the question. Okay, so good question. Sort of. So I've put in... So when I was writing a book about math mistakes, a lot of mathematicians would say, is it going to be like when this proof ended up having a flaw in it or this? And a lot of like quite niche, like genuine mistakes within specifically research mathematics. And I've actually stayed completely away from that. I was going to put in one as an example, what I'm not writing the book about, but then in the end I decided not to worry, and so I ended up just collecting applications of maths that have gone wrong. But I did want to have a human aspect to it, because otherwise it would just be a random collection of stories. And as you were saying about a book where you go try and put it into this structure, it's the story of a concept, it can't just be funny thing, and like then they're categorized, but there's no overall thing. So I had to put in, you know, me and, you know, things I've been through. And so some things are mistakes I've tried to fix. So I don't know if you noticed the football signs for football stadiums in the UK. Stadia. they have the football is wrong. So the footballs on the signs have hexagons where there should be pentagons in the football, right? Which annoys me no end. And as of now, will annoy you too. That's my gift to you all. And so I started a parliamentary petition to fix this. Right? I got like 20,000 signatures. The government had to respond. I won't give you any spoilers. You can look it up. But they haven't fixed it, no.
It got to Parliament, this.
I got a response. The Department for Transport have officially given me government communication saying they don't believe UK street signs have to be geometrically plausible. I'm paraphrasing that, they're my words, and then also, so there's stuff that I've done like that, right? But there's also mistakes that I've made. I'll try to put examples in, and so famously in a very small niche demographic, I do a lot of YouTube videos, and so I did a YouTube video about when I was trying to find a mathematical thing with certain properties. For those of you who want the details, it's a magic square, so a 3x3 grid of squares where they add to the same amount in rows, columns, and diagonals. But no one has ever found one where it's a 3x3 magic square where all the numbers are square numbers. I'm like, how good is that? Right? So I was like, well, I'm going to give it a go. I didn't find one. But I made this video with someone else about my attempts to find it and the closest I got, and the spirit was giving it a go. Like, I knew I wasn't going to succeed, because actually I knew people had checked up to into the billions, so I knew I wasn't going to find one. But I wanted to see how close I could get, and it was a challenge. And a lot of people in maths think that maths is all about getting the correct answer, and it's not. That's almost a byproduct. Maths is trying and being wrong, and then trying and being a bit less wrong, and then more wrong, and then you converge in on the least amount of wrong. And I want to, this is an example, but then the person making the video decided to name the magic square after me because it was terrible. And so he's like, what's it called? And I said on camera, I'm not calling it the Parker Square, because everyone will be like, ha ha ha, Parker Square, that's when your best is not just good enough, right? And so he's like, okay, I won't make a big deal of it. And then he named the video the Parker Square. He released a range of t-shirts. And people show up at my shows now wearing the t-shirt. So I tried to put, again, it's...
So I can see now, the question makes sense in terms of, were you drawing on that experience when going mathematical disaster rather than success?
Although, to be fair, I actually got the publisher signed off on the book from the proposal, like a couple months before that video happened. But now lots of mathematicians who now know me from getting this thing wrong, not wrong, not fully right, think that is what started the book, but it was a happy convergence.
I like the idea, that must drive mathematicians mad, like things are not being, like it's not zero or one, it's like,
I also like the first three rows were all going, yes, and everyone behind me going, oh, fuck it.
Literally today, we had the first person we found. Three cube numbers, which add to 33. No one ever found that before. Searching for decades, today someone found that solution to the problem.
I didn't know they were looking.
I saw it on the front page of the Times. I think big stuff after Brexit.
Could maths
fix Brexit? I wonder, is there anything that's a...
My publishers were like, your book's going to come out on the 7th of March. I was like, that's very close. Mm. This is like months ago, very close to the deadline, right? And everyone's going to say, hey, Matt, can you talk about the terrible numbers behind Brexit, right? And they're like, oh yeah, great, brilliant, we'll do that. I'm like, no, I'm saying don't do that, right? And so,
Not yet. Any other questions before we wrap up? Any other questions from the audience at this point? Just put your hand up, we can't see into the void too well, so.
My next show?
Is that
I can tell you about that.
Yes, there you go.
No, I was going to say, but I'm doing a new show called Happy Britain. I'm going to all 105 counties, the Google Centre of all 105 counties in the UK, to find the nearest person to that and ask them what makes them happy.
We have a new set list tattooed on your hand.
This one actually says hummus. This isn't actually a tattoo, this is his Sharpie. I didn't actually even look at it because there's a bit there that I missed that was very, very funny. Well, it's Guildford.
That's a good point, actually.
On which list, we should expand on that question. What's next for each of us? What's next? Writing things, stand up things.
Well, no, I am doing this tour of Happy Britain. Part one is in Edinburgh this August, and then in September I'm going to all 105 counties in the UK, including like Orkneys and Shetlands. I'm doing it on a motorbike because I'm having a midlife crisis. and my wife said, you can't, well basically what it was is that if you Google a county, it will come up with a completely random place depending on whether you've been anywhere near there or not. So you'll see the maths guy going,
I was gonna ask, what is the Google Center?
Get your phone and just type in a county, okay? And I think I typed in Somerset was the first one I came in, and it came up with a place called Western Zoyland. Which I know, I've never heard of. So I clicked on there and it said Western Zoyland is most famous, of course, due to Judge Jeffreys and the Bloody Assizes, right? Which so I clicked on that and it said, everyone knows about Judge Jeffreys and the Bloody, no. Anyway, there was the Duke of Monmouth in 1685 revolution started in Western Zoyland. I'm kind of nerdy like that, so I thought, oh, this is quite interesting. And then I sort of thought, well, what would be interesting, because everyone's talking about Brexit and also the fact that you just can't get, do we live in a bubble or is everything actually okay? So I thought, well, I'll go and ask what makes people happy. And I've done a bit already. I'm in Belfast in April, going to all counties in Northern Ireland. For example, I went to, Hampshire sent me to a place on a roundabout outside a shop called Tropics. Which I thought, oh, someone knows this. Under the rules that I've set myself is that I have to go in and find the person, and just the first person. But ironically, you can't actually get in through the front of Tropics. I say ironically because it's a gay sauna.
It all links back.
I generally went up the stairs to this sauna and I just realised that I'm probably not the first like middle-aged man, married man, going, I just want to ask you a question. I met the guy, his name was Brian, he was lovely, and I explained what I was actually doing, he was into it and everything, and I said, and I don't like stereotypes, I don't like dealing with stereotypes. And I said, what makes you happy? And he said, disco. So Hampshire is now the disco county, which I think is really cool. So that's what I'm doing. I'm going to all, that's my thing.
Where are you going to in Surrey?
In Surrey?
Well. So I don't know if anyone has ever left the wrong side of Woking Station and walked south two streets.
Yes.
But you've been to Surrey. Right there. That's where they're now. On the phone. I think Google Maps might be different on the phone.
Yeah, and it's different for everyone because some people get the same thing. So if you've been to different places, your phone will know where you've been. If you haven't been there, some people will get Western Zoyland drum set, some people will get other. I know it's good, isn't it?
I have wasted so much of my life at Woking Station.
If only you'd gone two roads away.
I know, but why just down there?
I don't know.
It's a sauna.
you've got to go in the back entrance, man.
There is a recurring theme. But anyway, so that's what I'm doing.
So that's what's next for you, which may be a book as well?
It is a book, yeah.
It is a book.
No, I did a crowdfunder and I raised $4,500. Which I've spent on petrol. I'm doing a lot. I should mention that we've got sponsorship from Calm. Well, not sponsorship, but we're partnered up with Calm, which is the campaign against living miserably. And because while I want to sort of talk about happiness, I just want to start conversations as well, which is what they want to do. And they do a lot of work with suicide and suicide prevention. So we're going to be going around basically starting conversations and telling the positive stories that are out there. There we go.
Well,
fantastic. You did applaud until I mentioned the charity.
Top that, Matt. What did you do? What did you
do? My plans for the future are to find out the exact time and location of Aidan's Edinburgh show.
Thank you, dude.
Working together, this never
ends. It's good. I like it. Aidan Commission.
You're out of time. So,
I'm at 7 p.m. at the suite venues, which is the Grass Market, and more importantly, my venue has air conditioning. I know it sells it because it's on the poster.
This room knows too well.
Talking of which, if you're the journalist lady, if you give me a nice review, if you give me a nice review, I'll put it on the poster.
You have become all things to all comedians.
We hope this goes somewhere for you.
So,
what's next for you?
Having done the book, now I'm about to launch into all the marketing that everyone has been sort of cheerful about, which is kind of good fun. And I am also doing Edinburgh. This is not announced yet because the program's not out. I'm doing Pleasance Dome at 8:20 p.m. So if anyone is in Edinburgh at a 8:15.
That means we can't do that. I'm sorry, we clash.
I know, that's the polite way. I wish I could. I've got to clear 20 minutes to get across to my venue, which is easy. So I'm doing that, and I'm on tour after that around the UK. I don't think I've got a Guildford date booked in. Oh, people ask, I live in Godalming, so I'm like just down the road. Right? It's like so convenient. And I went to my tour, and I was like, just book one gig, because I've done the Electric Theatre, which is lovely. And I was like, just book me there again. And they're like, we'll see. Touring around the country, talking about books.
So this is, again, for both you and me, been delightfully local. So thank you for that. Thank you for that. Rosie, you're not doing Edinburgh. I seem to recall you saying...
My own show in Edinburgh. I may still be doing a one-off podcast recording of the Breakup Monologues, but that is... We're still talking about that finding a date, because for one-offs you don't have to book them in until the last minute. The main thing for me is the Breakup Monologues podcast, which we record roughly once a month. We record a double bill in London at King's Place, if any of you are ever down in King's Cross. And we are going to be touring that around the country to some science festivals and different festivals. Port Elliot Festival in Cornwall in July, and Oxford Science and Ideas Festival in the autumn, and various other things, TBC. But if you want to listen to the podcast, it's available freely on iTunes and Spotify. There's a series, that's the fire, thank you, Matt. There's a series of 10 episodes, which was series one, which was mostly recorded in the studio, and now series two is coming out, which is all live in front of an audience. We just recorded one with Richard Herring, which was pretty cool, pretty awesome. And there's some very, very fabulous people who've been involved with it, all talking about kind of stories of being ghosted, being dumped, and heartbreak, and how we get over it. And sort of looking back with humour at relationship failures and disasters, and cheering ourselves up collectively. It's going well. So yes.
And these flyers are free.
Yeah, please take
at the back on the bar.
Please take a flyer and come and see us in London and check out and listen to the podcast.
That's very good.
The more people who download it, the more chance I have of possibly even getting a sponsor or just kind of doing more with it, selling more tickets to the live events and actually giving my guests some expenses and stuff like that, and giving some money to my my patient editor.
Very good. So this is, and it, as
and that
said,
will be the next book as well.
That's the next book.
Great,
okay. Great. Okay. And as we said earlier, you know, the fact that the changing nature of the comedy circuit is stand-up shows feed books, feed podcasts, it all sort of melds and merges together. So we wish you all well on all of your future and current projects.
I thought you were going to say Merry Christmas.
And let's all join together for We Wish You a Merry Lent. And a special thanks for coming out for this first attempt at such a thing. Should we give them a round of applause, ladies and gentlemen? Our first official authors. Thank you very much. Books are available still, aren't they?
Yes.
Yes.
Books are very much still available. So go buy them. That would be a good thing to do. We haven't done mailing lists or anything, but are we, if anyone, people can send email addresses to, we'll find us on Twitter.
Thank you.
Twitter.
Yeah. Twitter
is my main one, at Rosie Wilby.
At Mr. Aidan Cody, Twitter.
If you can't find me on Google, I don't want you following me.
Oh, they've got lost in the sauna.
Exactly, yeah. I will want to tweet at Paul Corentis, my one. I will tweet very shortly information about the next event, which is on July the 8th, I think it is. And that's going to be at the Guildhall on the High Street rather than here, because that is in the middle of Guildford Fringe Festival, when here will be some scintillating theatre and comedy and who knows what. The very next night after that, in here, I'm doing a new writing series of short plays called Three Times Tables, and it's myself and three other writers. We've all written short plays involving three tables, basically. So do come back for those, please, and don't. Thanks for coming. Round of applause to you guys as well. Thanks for coming out.
So that was Comedians with Books. I've told you already how to find information about the next one. The second Comedians with Books live event will be Guildford Fringe Festival in July of 2019. 1 month from the day this is put out there. I'll put the link in the podcast info. And yeah, great to see you. Come on down. Google Guildford Fringe Festival, Comedians with Books, and you will find information about that. The very next night, we're doing Three Times Tables, the evening of new theatre writing. Be great to see you at that if you can as well. That's at the Star Inn. Otherwise, have a look at my webpage, because I'm presuming most of you probably don't live in Guildford. So if you look at paulcorenza.com, click on the gig guide and you can see where I am around this fine landmass that we call Britain. I think we still call it Britain for now. A lot of political change going on. I think we're still Great Britain. We don't feel that great at the minute. We're still the United Kingdom, although I've always thought we should be the United Queendom. We should be the UQ, not the UK, with the monarch and all that. So either way, regardless, I wish you well. Get in touch. The Heptagon Club may be closed, but the Heptagon Club Facebook page lives on. So you can always follow us on that one, or mainly just follow me on Facebook, facebook.com/paul.corenza. Or on Twitter or on Instagram. That's the main things you'll find me on. Thanks for listening. I've waffled on a lot on this, but there's we've not spoken for a while. There's a lot to talk about. There's a lot I've not told you about. I've not even told you that yesterday I was on the train with the Archbishop of Canterbury. That was good fun. And then I got to the meeting I was going to, and the bloke at the next table said, "You never guess who I saw on the train today? The Bishop of Winchester." I thought, "Ha ha! I can trump you with that one. I see your Bishop of Winchester, and I raise you the Archbishop of Banterbury." Oh yes, indeed, Justin Welby. A pleasure to chat to him on the 8:32 from Guildford to Waterloo. Very nice indeed. Next week, as of recording this, I'm at the Lambeth Palace at his place for the Sanford St Martin Awards, awards celebrating religious broadcasting of all sorts. I believe they're giving an award to Bishop Curry. That'd be quite nice. The wedding sermon guy at Harry's wedding. And 13 minutes he spoke for, and you know, changed the world, I think, with his message to a certain degree. I've been waffling on for 13 minutes in total in these podcast intro bits and bits throughout the middle, and kind of feel I haven't achieved the same thing. Bishop Curry kind of puts you into perspective, doesn't he? Anyway, wish you well. Thanks for listening. And Comedians with Books is the current show I'm doing. Do find that out there. And yeah, a new podcast will arrive here at some point, but not soon, not regularly, and not now. Bless you, love you, wish you well, listen on, and live good lives. Oh, there's no theme music, by the way. I should have said that. It's not really a proper podcast, this, so this is just a collection of words, but isn't everything, really, apart from music. That's not. This is Paul Corenza saying goodbye for now.